Let the spirit of the Kennedys
and the magic of the Disney brothers be with you always.
Blood and Business Legacy merch, available now.
Let's run faster,
work harder,
burn brighter
before we're gone.
Order your Blood and Business Legacy merch today. This is an investigation into what happened on Chappaquiddick Island during the summer of 1969.
We want to give our condolences to Mary Jo Kopechne and her family. We are so sorry that she lost her life in this. We are not going to speculate or really converse about her, her life, or her involvement with the Kennedys.
We need to talk about the Kennedy siblings.
Episode 21.
Welcome to Blood and Business.
I'm Bethany.
And I'm Cassie.
Chappaquiddick has been called the, quote,
most brilliant cover-up ever achieved in a nation where investigative procedures are well-developed and where the principles of equal justice prevail, at least during some of those moments where people are watching.
Early-ish in the morning on Saturday, July 19th, around 7:30 in the morning, two guys went fishing. Nobody else is around. It is a super, super quiet, small, local seaside island off of Cape Cod. And nobody's driving around. There are some paved roads, some dirt roads. The only way to get to this island is by ferry. There's a small, like 150-yard channel of water that you obviously cannot drive across. And there's not bridges. It's just like operated by a ferry. So you drive your car up the ferry docks. You drive your car onto the ferry and then it crosses you to the other side.
Okay, so the only people on the island that early in the morning would be locals because that ferry is not operating until later in the day.
And there are not that many locals. It's a really, really small, kind of like rural seaside island. So that morning, Robert Samuel, who was a high school science teacher, and 15-year-old Joseph Capovella decided to go fishing. So they were thinking about fishing off of a bridge into the pond and then looking down in there to see like, oh, should we fish over here? They see a glint of metal reflecting in the water, like something is underneath submerged.
Okay.
So upon further inspection, he realizes it's the outline of a car and it's upside down and he can kind of make out that there's a license plate down there. Mind you, this is a very local, very private little island. He's immediately like, this is first of all not supposed to be there and second of all very new because this is not the Hudson River.
Right.
This is a little pond. That car just crashed, you know?
Yeah.
Like
this was last night.
I'm the first person seeing this. So immediately they're like, okay, well, this is 1969. They don't have cell phones. So they start walking to a little cottage that they see. This is the type of island where Mrs. Malm, who lived in said cottage, was preparing breakfast and she responded to Samuel's knock at her back door. I would have been like, it's 7 o'clock in the morning, you know?
Yeah.
On an island where nobody is. And she's like, hey.
On the back door.
On the back door. So they're like, we need to use your phone. There's a car upside down in the pond. And she's like, oh, shoot. So around.
So come into my home. I would be like, this is some ploy to get in my house.
Legit.
There's an emergency.
I think that the 80s and 90s satanic panic really ruined just us.
Screwed us over.
It's followed up by the 2014 true crime podcast wave. Anyway, we're all going to be fine.
Everyone's a serial killer.
So he calls the sheriff's office at around 8:20 in the morning and the police chief, Arena, says, yeah, I'll go out there myself. Whenever he gets to the ferry, he asks the ferry operator guy, have you heard anything about an accident at Dyke Bridge? He's like, no, not until right now when you're saying this. So nobody has heard anything. Nobody's reported anything. And they're worried because
someone might be in the car.
Yep. By the way, this is Leo Damore's book, Chappaquiddick, Power, Privilege, and the Kennedy Cover-Up. And it is very negative of Ted Kennedy. So Edward M. Kennedy, aka Ted Kennedy. We know lots about him, but he was the ninth and final child of the infamous Kennedy family in which JFK was born to, if this is your first episode. What you need to know, if you have not listened to the rest of our Kennedy Siblings series, which you definitely should because every episode is riveting, what you need to know is that Ted Kennedy is the babiest brother of the Kennedy family. Joe Jr. was the eldest brother, eldest sibling. He died in 1944. John F. Kennedy died in 1963. Robert F. Kennedy died in 1968. And Edward M. Kennedy is the last remaining Kennedy brother. Think about that. This is 1 year after Bobby Kennedy died, Robert F. Kennedy. So their cousin, Joseph Gargan, Joey Gargan, who grew up with them, his parents died when he was young. And so he was kind of just always with the Kennedys. The Kennedys' parents, Rose and Joe, kind of semi-adopted him, made sure he got to go to private schools and all the thing. He worked for Bobby Kennedy's campaign. And 1 year after Bobby Kennedy died, had the idea to throw a party for some of the girls who had done the most work on Bobby's campaign. This is July 1969. Bobby died in June of 68. So it's like the 1 year anniversary-ish.
Okay.
So who is coming to this memorial party? Joseph A. Gargan. He's the lawyer. He's Ted Kennedy's cousin. And he is the co-host of the party at Chappaquiddick. Also the person that came up with the idea. Paul Markham was also at the party. He's a lawyer and former U.S. attorney for Massachusetts. Ray LaRosa was a former fireman and Kennedy campaign worker. Charles Treader was a lawyer, head of the Boston Redevelopment Commission, and a Kennedy campaign aide. John Crimmins was Senator Kennedy's part-time chauffeur. All of these men were married. Ted Kennedy was also married. Ted Kennedy was also at the party. The rest of the party attendees were the boiler room girls. They called them this because they are the girls who did the most rigorous work during Bobby's campaign and all the work that they did, all the countless hours that they spent, the grueling labor was called the boiler room, just metaphorically. We have Mary Jo Kopechne, Rosemary Cricket Key, Esther Newberg, Susan Tannenbaum, Nance Lyons, and Mary Ellen Lyons, all single women. So the police chief Arena gets there and he sees the car submerged, except for the rear tires were kind of beginning to show. I don't know if the tide was going down or what, but the tires are sticking out above the water and he couldn't really see much else. So he decides to just jump in the water. Yeah. And
just starts stripping and plopping in.
So while he's wading into the water to go check the car out, Mrs. Malm, the girl who lived in the cottage, starts walking over and he asked her if she had heard anything last night because she's only like 400 yards away, the cottage. She said that she'd heard a car pass the house, quote,
going faster than usual
around midnight the previous evening, but nothing else. She didn't hear a crash. She didn't hear
screaming for help.
Right. And the police chief is like amazed that she didn't hear the car hit the water because you heard it driving, but you didn't hear the crash. So that's already strange. And then this is just so like Wind River. He asks her if he can, he like starts wading into the water and then he's like, I'm in my full on uniform. Can I borrow some boxer shorts? And she brings him some plaid shorts that he puts on to wade into the water.
They literally in front of just the neighbor lady just starts stripping down to his boxers to hop in the water. Also, does she never sleep? She hears the car just pass by at midnight and she's already up
cooking breakfast
at 7 a.m. Retired life.
Mm-hmm. Arena walked into the pond and waded in. Da, da, da.
So they literally call this a pond. It is a pond.
It's a pond. This is not the ocean. It's a pond on the island.
But isn't a lake
it's not the thing that goes...
It doesn't have to be the ocean. It could be a lake or something.
No, it's a pond. It's a small pond. It's not the ocean. It's not the like channel where you take the ferry across. This is a bridge that goes across a pond on the small, tiny little island.
Okay.
So he swam towards the car.
So no wonder the car is just like floating because it's not, there's no like running water.
No, it does have turbulence.
Oh, there is? Okay.
Current. It says turbulence here, but there's a current. He dove underwater. He only caught a blurred glimpse of the automobile before he was dragged away by a really strong current. Jeez. And it was running, the current was running all the way to a depth of like 6 feet, he said, because he couldn't reach the bottom.
Okay.
And he started to like really dread what he was going to find because whoever had driven off the bridge might not have escaped from the crushed and upended position in which the vehicle had landed and still could be trapped inside. Any survivor would have reported the accident by now, and there had been no report on the answering machine that recorded calls after the police station closed. Well, so that's how freaking small this place is. They're like, if you call...
The police station just shuts down.
Yeah.
Not even a receptionist or anyone is there to take the calls.
It'll be on the recording machine in the morning.
Oh my gosh, it's kind of terrifying. Like,
yeah.
Hopefully nothing happens to you at night, ever.
The police chief asked the two small boys standing near the bridge watching if they knew where there was a face mask he could use. I think there's one in the boat, he said, which apparently everyone's out here fishing this morning. Mm-hmm. And they have snorkeling gear. That's a very like nautical.
There's
community.
A movie called, it's a really good like fall winter movie. Well, it's definitely more winter,
I've
but it is a small
that.
Seaside town and it's a true crime
like
story.
This.
And it is, I'm like picturing it this entire time. It's an Amazon original called Blow the Man Down, Small Town, Big Secrets.
Ooh.
And it's also about siblings. It's about two sisters.
I've seen that cover.
It's really cute.
So about 25 minutes after he got the initial phone call, he's already ridden the ferry across the channel. He's at the scene. He borrowed the boxers, dove into the water, and is like hanging on to the car, but he can't get into the car because the current is so strong that the car doors are just like smashed shut. Uh-huh. And they can't figure out, like they can't see really if there's somebody
in there
or what, because it's literally upside down. So then John Farrar arrives on scene. He's a scuba diver and head of the search and rescue division of Edgartown Volunteer Fire Department. I don't know why that's funny, but their volunteer fire department literally has a scuba diver on like staff.
I love it.
It's so nautical. I need to stop laughing.
Why?
Because it's
sad. It's
like,
it's so cute. Like, we're not from a small town.
Okay. It does remind me of Jaws, though.
Yeah.
That's kind of the vibes.
It's giving Jaws. It's giving Blow the Man Down. It's giving Series of Unfortunate Events. The Volunteer Fire Department.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
VFD.
Amazing. So... He, the scuba diver, changed into a full diving suit en route to the accident scene, arriving at 8:45 a.m. Arena's attention, the police chief's attention, was diverted to a volunteer firefighter and the fire chief. And he told them the license plate number because he was like close enough to look under the water and see it. And then the other guy received over the cruiser's radio that the license plate L78207 had been issued to Edward M. Kennedy. Room 2400, JFK Building, Government Center, Boston.
My God, another tragedy,
Arena thought. His concern for the accident tuned to a higher frequency of alarm. But he had no time to ponder the news that it was Ted Kennedy's car he was sitting on, upside down in the middle of a pond, because the scuba diver was swimming toward him holding a safety line. He gave Arena one end of the rope, put an oxygen tube in his mouth, and dove underwater. The car was an Oldsmobile, and it was facing in the opposite direction that it had been traveling before plunging off the bridge. So it like literally...
Yeah, it flipped.
Like traveling this way? Yeah, so it literally like flipped completely...
Upside down.
Yeah.
Only speed could account for such an aerial maneuver,
Farrar said later.
The car must have been going at a pretty good clip to land almost in the middle of the channel.
It took several seconds for his eyes to adjust, but the front seat, the driver's seat, was empty. He made his way back to the back of the car, fighting the current. Through the top right-hand corner of the rear window, he saw 2 feet. Motionless.
Oh, how terrifying.
Yeah. It says that he like scaled over to the right side of the car and the rear passenger window had been blown out. Shards of glass were like sticking out around the window. So I don't know if the car is like fully submerged with water, I guess. So he throws himself into the car through the hole. And finally, once he's all the way inside the car, he looks up through his goggles and sees that it's the body of a young woman. Her head is cocked back and her mouth and nose are pointed towards the floorboard, which since the car's upside down is
the ceiling
above her. And it almost looks like she's grasping for that last little bubble of air in the car. Quote,
if she had been dead or unconscious, she would have been prone to sinking to the bottom or floating to the top. She definitely was holding herself in a position to avail herself the last remaining air that had been trapped in the car.
He grabbed her right thigh, and as soon as he touched her, he knew she was dead. Her leg was as hard as wood, and it was cold.
Instead of life-saving, I was evidence gathering.
Oh my gosh. So she for sure was not knocked out and then drowned. She
didn't look like it.
Consciously fighting for air, slowly dying. And then the window that is blown out. It's like, did someone do that while the car was sinking? Did that happen before the car started sinking? But it wouldn't have because she would have been able to get out. Like, unless she was just
panicking,
not paying attention, but I doubt it. I'm sure she tried to, like, if you're panicking, the car is sinking, you're going to try to bust open a window.
Unless she already was stuck somehow, but seems like he's able to pull her out pretty quickly.
But I guess if she could have been unstuck afterwards, but yeah. I doubt it. I don't know
that it was weird because how did the car fill up with water?
Well, because it's not sealed. Well,
it would just slow.
I guess.
You'd think that, I mean, I don't know. Maybe she, I don't know. Because it doesn't seem like she was trying to bust out the window when the water like overtook her and pushed her back in because she's holding herself. I don't know.
Because I was the only person who would be able to observe this situation, it behooved me to think about what I saw underwater to be able to report it.
So he observes, he flips the body inside the car.
There was still a little air left in her,
he observed, because her body was buoyant. Like she was pretty
sinking.
Easy. Yeah, he wasn't having to like drag her. It was like she was floating. So he had to put her head first through the window and push her out.
He's not saying he's re-breaking the window to make the hole larger. Because I was thinking maybe it only...
Yeah.
The window only broke a little bit, but
he swam through
it.
Yeah. And he's just pushing her like
fully through it. So that's so confusing.
It took him about 10 minutes from the time he got to the car to get her out.
Also, they already know it's Ted Kennedy's car. So they're like, was she driving or where's Ted Kennedy?
Where is Ted Kennedy?
My God, it's a body. Do you recognize her? Is it one of the Kennedy clan?
Arena asked.
I haven't had a chance to see if I recognize her or not,
Farrar said. He turned the body over in the water. Arena examined the face for a Kennedy family likeness. A great look of relief washed over Arena's face before he said,
thank God, no, I don't recognize her. It isn't one of the clan.
That's crazy that the Kennedy curse, all of the Kennedy tragedies was that well known. Well, I mean, by this point,
It's happening. Though.
But yeah, while people are still alive, obviously.
Because
They're like, not again. Literally, Joan.
Yeah,
not again.
There was a friendship ring on the victim's left hand. 2 gold bracelets dangled from her wrist. She had a long sleeve white blouse on. She was blonde. Quote,
she appeared normal in the sense that there were no injuries that I could see. If she hadn't been wringing wet, it was as if she was about to go to work or to a party because everything was in place. Everything was buttoned right up.
Arena, the police chief, ordered to have a tow truck sent to the scene and to have the Registry of Motor Vehicles notified, quote,
and see if you can find out where Ted Kennedy is and get him down here.
So the diver, Farrar, dove back under the water. He He found a workman's lunch pail lacquered with decoupage of flowers fashioned into a handbag. When Arena opened it, water gushed forth with cosmetics and articles of grooming. A wallet contained a Virginia driver's license and a pass for the United States Senate, identifying Rosemary Key of Washington, D.C.
Oh.
There were two keys for room number 56 at the Catamount Shores Motor Inn of Edgartown. So that would be not on Chappaquiddick Island. That's a hotel that's across the ferry.
Okay. So they're thinking this is Rosemary.
Yes.
She's supposed to be staying in a hotel across the island or on more of like the mainland area.
In Edgartown.
She's in Ted Kennedy's car. What is she doing here? And who's she supposed to be staying with at the hotel?
And it's clearly Ted Kennedy related because she's got a pass for the United States Senate. So because they have the key for the motel, he called and received confirmation that Rosemary was one of the six young women who had occupied three rooms there since Thursday. None of the beds had been slept in the previous night. So Arena told Farrar, the diver, to check downstream.
It's possible there were other people in the car. They might be in the pond someplace.
That would be scary.
Yeah, because at this point you're assuming, oh my God, there's six people that were staying at this motel with her. Right. Where are the rest of them? And why would she be by herself in Ted Kennedy's car?
Right.
She would at least have another girlfriend, a guy, someone with her.
Yeah.
If she's with a group, why is she, if she's like vacationing by herself with a group, why is she by herself?
In not her car. Yeah.
And also, why would the group have not reported her missing?
Right.
I don't think we can get a hold of the registry today. You better get the car out as soon as you can and hold it at the garage. That's Ted Kennedy's car down there in the water. Gee, I just saw him at the ferry landing on the Chappie side.
Somebody else said.
Oh
God, I better get a hold of him,
Arena said. A special duty police officer showed up.
You probably can keep the traffic away from the bridge,
Arena told him.
There's a car overturned in the pond. We're trying to figure out if there's anyone else in it. I saw a car last night,
Look said.
I hope to God it isn't the same one.
Arena was too preoccupied to continue the conversation and walked off. At the, like, dock where the ferry is. By the way, the ferry is called the On Time.
That's cute.
Yeah.
That sounds like locally owned.
Absolutely. So around 9:30 a.m., this guy who is at the dock says,
do you know about the accident? It's Ted Kennedy's car and there's a dead girl in it. Well, he's standing right over there with two men.
So the guy who knew about it confronted Ted Kennedy and said,
Senator, do you know there's a girl found dead in your car? Do you need a ride down to the bridge? No,
Kennedy said.
I'm going on over to town.
No alarm?
Did you hear what I said about the dead girl? Word travels fast.
Yeah.
The lady who owns the cottage just walks back to her house.
Legit. Absolutely.
Gets on the phone.
Absolutely.
So wait, Ted Kennedy is still on Chappaquiddick Island or he is on Cape Cod?
Kennedy had boarded the ferry shortly after Ewing reported for work at 9 a.m. So, no, he came over to Chappaquiddick Island from the mainland, Edgartown.
Okay.
At 9:50 a.m., he spotted Ted Kennedy on board the On Time bound for Edgartown. So now he's going back across the other way. Like, what in the world? So the assistant medical examiner, Dr. Mills, received a call because medical examiner Dr. Robert Nevins was off that day. He left his office, drove to the ferry landing, and when he gets to the scene, Dr. Mills observed a dozen bystanders on Dyke Bridge, and wearing a bathing suit and wet t-shirt, Police Chief Arena was entering Dyke House. Okay, so Arena used Mom's phone to call the police station. He told Carmen Salvador. Okay, so Ted is at the police station because Carmen Salvador says,
he's right here, Chief.
Salvador said,
and he wants to talk to you.
He puts Ted on the phone at the police station with Arena, the police chief who is at Dyke House, still at the scene using Mrs. Malm's phone.
I'm afraid, Senator, I have some bad news,
Arena said.
There's been another tragedy. Your car was in an accident over here, and the young lady is dead. I know,
Kennedy said.
Can you tell me, was there anybody else in the car? Yes,
Kennedy said.
Are they in the water? No,
Kennedy said.
Can I talk to you? Could I see you? Do you want to come over here, Arena said, or do you want me to go over there? I prefer for you to come here,
Kennedy said. Not bothering to change clothes, Arena rushed out of Dyke House to find a ride to Edgartown. Soaking wet, Arena greeted Carmen Salvador at the station's front desk, a sweet-faced woman. So she's the one who got Ted on the phone. So Carmen Salvador reports that when Ted Kennedy walked in, he asked to borrow a telephone. This is after he was on the phone with the chief. He wants to borrow the phone again to make another call. And so she led him back into the chief's office and let him use that one.
Privately.
Privately. Kennedy looked, quote,
really nervous,
Salvador reported. She's the secretary, the police secretary.
He seemed to think I knew all about what happened, but I didn't. I thought someone had taken his car for a joyride.
A tall man followed Kennedy into the station. He, too, had asked to use the telephone. Salvador watched him misdial the phone on her desk, make two calls that made no sense to her, and then join Ted Kennedy in Arena's office and close the door. Kennedy was using the phone when Arena entered his office and said,
hello, Senator, I'm Jim Arena.
Kennedy hung up, came around the desk to shake Arena's outstretched hand and said, hello, Jim. From his state trooper days in Boston, Arena recognized the other man in the office as former U.S. Attorney Paul Markham. Arena said,
I'm sorry about the accident. Yes, I know,
Kennedy said.
I was the driver. Nothing in my prior career as a police officer,
Arena recalled later,
had prepared me for standing in a wet bathing suit and shaking hands with a United States senator and a Kennedy who tells me that he is the driver of a car from which I have just removed the body of a beautiful young girl. I was stunned.
They literally didn't think that he had anything to do with it. The secretary lady's like, sure, use the private phone.
Yeah.
This is so...
Absolutely.
They're horrible. Like, I'm so sorry a tragedy has happened that involves your car.
But here, listen to this.
Our roles could have been reversed. The senator was in clean, dry clothes. Poised, confident, and in control, using my office and telephone. I'm standing in a puddle of water in a state of confusion, thinking I had only minutes before broken the news of a personal tragedy he's now telling me, quite calmly, he knows all about.
What? Why are you... unscathed? Why are you like completely dry, completely clean?
I would be like, no, this is a joke. Yeah.
Completely calm.
I was literally just at the scene. You were not there. And I can promise you that it did not look good. And you look way too fine to have been involved in that.
I was just at the scene and you're behind my desk making phone calls in a pressed shirt. Like,
what?
And you're telling me you were driving the car? The one that's underneath the water, upside down in a pond right now, with a dead girl inside. He's like, huh? Come again?
It's almost as if that can't be true.
Arena had assumed that the accident victim had driven the car off of Dyke Bridge herself. He said,
do you happen to know where Rosemary is from so that we can notify her next of kin?
Quote,
it isn't Cricket, it's Mary Jo Kopechne.
Kennedy said,
I've already notified her parents.
Because we just declared her dead. How have you already told her parents that she's dead? You didn't call me to tell me she's in the bottom of a pond. So why did you call her parents? Arena asked how to spell the last name. Kennedy only knew how to pronounce it.
We can find out how to spell it later,
Markham suggested. That's the other person that was in there. That's the lawyer.
What would you like for me to do?
Kennedy said.
We must do what is right or we'll both be criticized for it.
Well, probably what would be right is not this situation. I feel like that ship has sailed.
I automatically fell back on years of police training and began to process the matter as though it was a routine traffic case.
As far as Arena could see, it was a motor vehicle accident. He said, quote,
"The first thing we have to do is have a statement from you about what happened. Would it be all right if I wrote it out?"
Kennedy said, requesting time undisturbed to prepare the statement. Arena led the way to an unoccupied town office down the corridor from the police station so the senator could have some privacy. So the police station is like inside the town hall that also has like other offices and stuff. Like, this is a small town. And Ted Kennedy is just, oh my gosh.
Running the place.
Oh my gosh.
He's been there for 5 minutes and is running the place.
Kennedy asked Arena to return to Chappaquiddick to see that his car got out and cleared okay. Arena was glad for the reprieve. The admission that Senator Kennedy had been the driver of the fatal accident car thoroughly rattled him. On the way to the ferry, Arena collected his thoughts. He's literally the police chief who has just left Ted Kennedy to write his statement while he goes and checks on his car for him and makes sure his car gets out okay. Oh, what are you doing?
And like, he's so just caught off
like,
guard.
What is happening? Yeah, he's confused.
And so confused that like anyone who's giving him any sort of direction, mm-hmm. he's just going with it because he's like, I don't even know what to do.
Yep.
He's also just trying to act like this is a routine traffic accident. Like, it was a car accident. Someone died.
That's all he knows how to do.
Yeah. So he's not.
Because there's
They're not treating him like he murdered anyone.
No.
They're not treating him like he broke the law at all.
Mm-mm.
So he's like, sure, you can.
Right. He's not under arrest. It's just a report of what happened. Mills, the medical examiner assistant who was at the scene of the accident, is kind of operating the same way because he is the one that could ask for an autopsy to be done
uh-huh.
because not everybody who dies gets an autopsy, obviously. So that's up to him to call for one or not. And he told Officer DeRoche to contact the district attorney's office in New Bedford, quote,
"Tell them I have the case of a girl who was trapped in a submerged vehicle for a matter of hours and has obviously drowned. That I am fully satisfied with my diagnosis of drowning by immersion, that I don't know who she is, but she is reputed to be an employee of the Kennedy family. And if it is the judgment of the district attorney or the assistant that an autopsy is indicated, then I will ask for one."
Okay. So he's saying, yeah,
it's clear to me.
Medically,
she drowned.
She drowned. If you think something suspicious has gone on, I can come back, but I'm satisfied.
It's up to me. It's very clear what happened here. We don't need to waste time, tax dollars.
Yeah.
Mills wasn't making the request for medical reasons. Quote,
"We almost never do autopsies in drowning cases on the island."
That's probably like one of the most common deaths as well on the island.
"I was requesting the consideration of an autopsy because of the connection with a prominent person. That was particularly important in my mind. I felt it was too big of an issue for me to handle single-handedly. I felt the evidence of drowning was conclusive, but I'm no detective."
If this was not Ted Kennedy, case closed, she drowned. You can let them decide if they want to do more only because it's Ted Kennedy, though. If this was just some random Joe that lives down the street, that's all I would do.
Yeah.
When Arena walked back in after going to check on the car, came back to Ted Kennedy, he was pacing. The statement was, quote,
"nearly finished,"
Markham said. He's the attorney.
Wait, so Ted Kennedy was pacing?
Yeah, Ted Kennedy was pacing. Arena took the opportunity to take a real close look at Ted Kennedy.
He just walks in.
He's like,
Ted Kennedy's pacing. He's like,
let me take this in again. What do you look like? What's been going on?
"I found it hard to believe the senator had been in a major automobile accident. His face bore no traces of any marks. He never sat down or appeared in any kind of physical discomfort. If he had been injured in shock or confused, nothing of it lingered in our meeting, to my observation. But the senator made it a point to tell me 3 times, without my asking, that he was the driver of the accident car.
He's like, hey, by the way, I was driving. Do you remember I was driving? So I was driving this car. And Arena, the police officer, is not asking for this information. Then he continues,
it was as though he wanted to make sure I got it right.
Exactly. What? Arena could think of no reason why Ted Kennedy would admit to that if it were not true. But what we know now about false confessions, just keep it in the back of your mind. It's immediately strange to the police.
What do we know about false confessions?
People falsely confess to crimes all the time.
Just like your natural glory for it?
No, your natural thought would be like, your natural thought is if you didn't commit a crime, you would never say that you did because then you're going to get in trouble. But if you're put under a lot of pressure, sometimes you feel like the way to get out of that pressure is to just be like, yeah, I did it. Confess. And that's how people get false confessions all the time and they go to jail because the police were pushing them so hard. And finally, they're like, the way out of here is to tell them what they want to hear. So yes, I did it. Because with how much mental pressure there is, that seems like the easier
option.
Right.
Kind of like a survival.
Yeah, exactly. If you get to a panicky enough place,
I'll give you whatever you want. Yeah.
So the police weren't putting any pressure on Ted. But to say that he was under an unsurmountable amount of pressure,
we know, would be true. The end of last episode. Yeah. Wow. It's like he just already had that built-in mental pressure.
I mean, that is just like...
of being Ted Kennedy.
Yes, you're Ted Kennedy. Your brothers are legends.
Will you're forever be enshrined as legends because they're dead.
And you are screwed up and a wreck and a mess.
And a letdown.
And also terrified that you're going to be shot. We know from quotes from Ted that actually are in this book and that we'll get to later. He's literally scared for his life, like every day. Because he's the fourth of four boys who have all been killed.
Well, yeah, why would you not be?
And two of them were assassinated because they were politicians and you're a politician.
One of them was literally a year ago,
mm-hmm.
which is no time at all.
So just keep these things in mind. Here is Ted's written statement that he turned into Arena.
On July 18th, 1969... at approximately 11:15 p.m. in Chappaquiddick, Martha's Vineyard, Massachusetts, I was driving my car on Main Street on my way to get to the ferry back to Edgartown. I was unfamiliar with the road and turned right onto Dyke Road instead of bearing hard left on Main Street. After proceeding for approximately 1/2 mile on Dyke Road, I descended a hill and came upon a narrow bridge. The car went off the side of the bridge. There was one passenger with me. One Miss Mary,
with a blank because he wasn't sure how to spell her last name.
A former secretary of my brother, Senator Robert Kennedy. The car turned over and sank into the water and landed with the roof resting on the bottom. I attempted to open the door and the window of the car, but I have no recollection of how I got out of the car.
Safest thing to say is, I don't know.
I don't know.
How could I have gotten out of the car?
And that's all I have to say.
Can you tell me, was the window broken? Was there a door open?
Like, can you believe that? Do you hear that right now?
I came to the surface and then repeatedly dove down to the car in an attempt to see if the passenger was still in the car. I was unsuccessful in the attempt. I was exhausted and in a state of shock. I recall walking back to where my friends were eating. There was a car parked in the front of the cottage, and I climbed into the back seat. I then asked for someone to bring me back to Edgartown. I remember walking around for a period and then going back to my hotel room. When I fully realized what had happened this morning, I immediately contacted the police.
From this written statement is when Arena, the police chief, finally realizes, oh, it's been 10 hours since the accident happened. So
that's the first time they asked.
You can look like you are completely dry and fine, but still doesn't explain like the no bruises, no scars, no scratches, really no shock. No nothing.
He's completely put together.
But that's how little the police chief is understanding. He's like, oh, you went back to your hotel. You went to sleep before we had a conversation.
Yeah, I guess the assumption would be that you just immediately go to the police. The assumption would not be, where have you been for the last 12 hours? But also you would think that her body would not be that stiff if it had only been like 2 hours. So you would think that he would kind of know. It's been a minute.
I think it just was all so fast, strange. And he just like hadn't had a chance to sit down and think about
process,
it.
Yeah.
Talk about it like we are.
Mm-hmm.
Also, Arena asked to see Ted Kennedy's driver's license. He didn't have it with him.
I can't find my wallet,
he said. And when he asked to know if the license had been properly renewed, like if his license was active.
Up to date.
Yeah, up to date. Kennedy was sure it had been, but no, it was fully expired.
Oh.
En route to the airport, Kennedy muttered,
oh my God, what has happened? What has happened?
He repeated the phrase during an uneventful 10-minute flight to Hyannisport Airport.
10 minutes.
What is nuts to me is that Ted Kennedy turned in this written report to the police and then just goes, hey, hold on to that until I get my lawyer to read over it and clear it before you do anything with it.
How is that insane?
A guilty person being like...
I feel like any sane person that has...
You wouldn't write a report until you won't talk to your freaking lawyer.
Oh, you're saying why did he hand it over before
yes.
he has his lawyer? Yeah.
The Markham guy was, yeah.
In the room with him.
Yeah.
So he just wants a second opinion maybe, but still, yeah. Why would you hand it over? Just
you're not wait. Under arrest. Yeah. Yeah. I'm just, it's Ted Kennedy, I guess. Nothing's
but
ever
also,
permanent and you don't have to be.
Yeah. It's just,
there's no consequences.
It's just paperwork.
It was just an admin type of a thing.
So also if you're guilty, I feel like you wouldn't. He's like too chill. He's like literally handing over a written statement to the police and is like, hey, I want my attorney to look over it before you publish it or show anyone else it. But I think it's good for now. You know, like I think you would be a lot more scared to write anything down if you
didn't
think
want
it looks
to
really,
be
really
found
bad.
Out. He like wants
either that or he just, yeah, because everyone has cleaned up after him. He's never had consequences. He did it. And he knows it looks bad, but he's like, it's not that big of a deal. Like, it will end up being fine for me and my
right.
reputation.
Right.
Because everything always is. And it was.
Burke Marshall, that's the lawyer that he was like waiting for.
You can't release this to the press. It's a confession for sake.
Any lawyer advising Ted Kennedy was likely to be calling up any minute to say not to release this thing. So, like, the Markham guy, was he actually acting as a lawyer? Like, what? Everyone else is like, are you insane?
Yeah, I would think any lawyer would be like, why are you?
Anyway.
Also, that lawyer would be in the room while Ted is saying 3 times, I drove the car. I was the one driving. I'm the driver of the accident.
Yeah, shut up, Ted.
Yeah, you would think that any lawyer would be like, don't talk. Just don't say anything.
Don't say anything.
Rose knew Ted shouldn't be saying anything.
Exactly. Even around trusted people. So I also need to tell you, the written statement was not in Ted Kennedy's handwriting.
Well, clearly,
the Markham guy wrote
obviously
it.
Obviously, he's pacing around while he's telling
yeah.
the guy to write it.
I just forgot to clarify that.
Yeah.
The Kennedy family physician on Cape Cod, Dr. Robert Watt, was summoned to Hyannisport. The senator told him he'd been in an automobile accident on Martha's Vineyard. There was a lapse in his memory from hitting Dyke Bridge and struggling to get out of a submerged car. At the last moment, he'd grabbed the side of an open window and pulled himself out. So now he suddenly remembers, oh, there's a window. He remembered diving repeatedly to get a passenger out of the car without success, going for help, and returning to the accident scene. Again, efforts to rescue the passenger failed. Kennedy was driven to the ferry slip and swam to Edgartown. Returning to his hotel room, he had slept fitfully until 7 a.m. the next morning. This is what he's telling his doctor at Hyannisport. Watt's examination disclosed a half-inch scrape above the right ear, a bruise with spongy swelling at the top of the senator's head, and a muscle spasm in an area about the nape of the neck. He diagnosed concussion, contusions, and abrasion of the scalp, and acute cervical strain.
Okay, so none of that means anything to me because
he's just inventing crap.
Yeah. But the rest of it, I could see happening. I don't think the rest of it is that crazy.
What?
Like, say that he is in the car. He is the driver.
Uh-huh.
People...
Which is, I would like to say, the most likely scenario.
Yes.
I tend to think... I rather think... But that is the theory, the story that everyone agreed on at the time. I'm just saying, keep your eyes and ears open because there's one police officer that I'm like, and just the way that everything is, just...
It would make sense. But the story that is in the main episode, Ted's story.
Yeah.
I feel like it is plausible. It's not that crazy. His statement doesn't sound like it. And it's possible.
It's for sure possible.
Like, yes, your memory does go missing when, like, shocking things happen. Your memories can start coming back to you as you're separated from the event.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like it's not unheard of for you to, like, flee. Because...
No, definitely not. Like, people do that all the time. Yeah, for sure.
Take a minute and then realize what happened. And then they're like, hey, crap, I've got to...
Or he's just, like, trying to concoct some story, some way he's going to be get out of it. Or even somebody in here... says, I saw him at the hotel late that night, said hi to him and everything. And people are like, oh, he was going back to the hotel to create an alibi, make sure somebody saw him at the hotel and then went to sleep like nothing happened because he was going to go with the story that like he wasn't there.
Uh-huh.
Especially if you're Ted Kennedy, you've gotten away with everything your whole life.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. We'll keep reading and we'll keep talking.
Kennedy's wrong turn had led him to, quote, a very narrow bridge that could easily be mistaken for something else when looked at with automobile headlights,
Arena explained to the press. The approach to Dyke Bridge was unmarked by warning signs, quote,
lack of tire marks
on the bridge indicated to Arena that Senator Kennedy never attempted to brake the car, but drove straight off the side of the bridge in the belief that he was still on the road. Although the bridge angled to the left. So the scene looked like someone just went straight and was thinking that the road went straight and drove diagonally off the bridge because the bridge goes diagonal. Because there were marks on the bridge, but he said that they looked more like someone was like sliding rather than like skidding.
Breaking.
Like, yeah. But no skid marks like...
Someone knows they're about to get in an accident.
Right.
Yeah.
The investigation conducted at the scene revealed, quote,
no criminal negligence was involved in the accident,
Arena said.
There's nothing to indicate excessive speed or reckless driving.
Speaking to the press, Arena said,
at this time, I find the accident is strictly accidental.
A lot of the information in this book is from interviews that the author did with Joey Gargan.
Okay. Remember, Joey Gargan is the cousin whose parents died when he was younger. And Anne Gargan is his sister. She's the one who took care of Joe Sr. after his stroke.
And if you listen to those KFMs, Joey and Anne, their relationships with the Kennedys is...
What's going on?
Complicated and a little toxic.
And what were their parents like
pre-dying? So what... rubs me the very wrong way about Joey Gargan is that, I mean, a lot of things, but after Bobby died, Ted was distraught. He was not well. He was very paranoid. He was drinking often. And Joey knew all of this. He would take him out on like boat rides, just the two of them. And Ted would sit in silence for hours. I mean, like he saw how Ted
firsthand,
was.
Very intimately. the shape that Ted was in.
He was also talking to Joey a lot about how fearful he was of losing his own life. Quote,
I know I'm going to get my ass shot off, and I don't want to.
He knew how much he was suffering the pressure and the weight of the expectations that were put on him, presidential expectations and the political legacy with him being the only Kennedy man left. So why, if you know how bad your cousin is doing, you know that he's a mess, you know that he needs help, like, walking the right path and staying out of trouble. Why, if you care about him genuinely, would you throw a party with alcohol and a bunch of single girls and a bunch of married men?
Because maybe he thinks it's going to cheer him up. Like, maybe he's, like, trying to be a decent friend, but he just is stupid. But I don't know, because he's, like,
but
not
18.
But then
he immediately threw him under the bus. The night of the incident, Joey is notified very shortly after. And though he says he was not drinking, he doesn't take control of the situation at all to help his supposed drunk, in shock,
best
concussion,
slash cousin,
whatever, best friend. He just goes back to the party. And then afterwards says, well, I told him he needs to report it, like, 8 times. I told him. Like, that's just not a friend.
No, especially at that level of...
You, like, grew up together.
Yeah, they're borderline family.
They're borderline brothers.
Yeah, brothers. They are family.
Yeah.
He's definitely helping Ted tank his life.
There were always more doctors willing to help him, help her into oblivion.
And was it the Robert Dalek quote or who said that for the rest of Ted's life, people would be there to give him whatever they thought that he might want?
Mm-hmm.
So Joey gave him a party.
Joey.
Just surrounded by a bunch of yes men. And yeah, maybe Joey was just, like, so obsessed with the fun of being around Ted Kennedy, Cadillac Eddie.
I think so. I think he was
really care about who he became.
So Joey is the one who booked the house rental, organized the whole thing. Gargan was disappointed at the turnout. Quote,
I thought more girls would be there. It was supposed to be a repeat performance of last summer's weekend.
And you know what's so sad?
What?
That weekend, we need to look this up to just, like, triple check it. That weekend was the weekend that Neil Armstrong walked on the moon as the first man to step foot on the moon, which is what Jack Kennedy had set as a goal for America.
Mm-hmm. Put into
and
motion.
Ted ruined their whole legacy that weekend.
What weekend was it? July 18th and 19th. Was Chappaquiddick.
That weekend, like, that was happening on the news. Like, one of the guys didn't go to the party because he wanted to stay home and watch.
Wow. So Chappaquiddick happened the night of July 18th. And then July 19th is when, obviously, everyone found the car. And yeah, that's all happening. Then July 20th is when the Apollo lunar landed on the moon. And then Neil Armstrong stepped onto the moon, like, 6 hours later, which was July 21st.
Wow.
And then isn't Joe Jr.'s birthday July 25th?
Yeah. Yeah. So there's so much Kennedy legacy looming over, you know? And mm-hmm. Bobby just died. Oh, okay. This is just rich. This is Gargan. Joey Gargan.
Had no idea what anybody was drinking.
He was suffering from an upset stomach, so he was just sticking to Coca-Cola. I was interested in the food. That was my deal. I was doing all the preparations. I don't know if anyone was, like...
Yeah, just not taking, like, accountability for anything and,
please,
like, making it sound like you were just the completely most clean... He's the one who literally organized the whole thing. And he's,
and,
like,
then you're trying to pretend you're a Sunday school boy.
I was just there drinking my soda, minding my own business. I feel like you're more culpable because you weren't drunk.
That's what I...
Like, if you were completely wasted and your cousin was like, it's fine, I'm going to go to the police station. And you're like,
I understand.
I'm fully, like, trashed.
Right.
I can't do anything. you're fully sober and you're just like, okay, you go do that. Whether you think he was a part of it or not.
Why would you need to go to the police? This girl is in the lake.
And you should not be going by yourself. I don't care if you, I told you a million times. I would never, I wouldn't even let a stranger go to the police station by themselves after they've been in an accident or witnessed an accident.
But he claims, I was the person that all the boiler room girls knew the most. So it was important for me to be the one to go back and make sure no one was alarmed.
Who cares about no one being alarmed? Literally, everyone needs to be alarmed. There is cause for alarm. Someone is dead. Our friend, our close friend that we were just partying with 5 minutes ago is dead.
So even if you're like looking out for Ted by trying to make sure that he goes and reports it to the police before anybody else figures out anything and like whatever, you're still a bad friend.
Yeah.
Like that's not what needs to happen.
And if you really, really, really think that you are you're best serving Ted Kennedy by going back to the party and making sure everyone's okay and no one suspects anything, send the chauffeur with
Ted. Thank you.
Orchestrate something. Call someone else up and be like, hey, get your butt down here. I need someone to watch Ted while I watch these girls.
So in addition to in addition to the whole Coca-Cola claim, Joey Gargan literally says, most people were bored by the party. It was just like a dinner party. It was honestly, I wish that it would have been a cooler party, but it was actually so lame and I'm ashamed of the party. It was boring. People were bored.
We weren't doing anything.
Yeah. Then the neighbors are like, after so many hours and at 3 a.m., I was cursing them because it's so loud and rowdy. So Joey's story is that he was in the kitchen. Somebody came and got him and said, hey, Ted is outside. He wants to talk to you. Then Joey goes outside and Ted says, there's been a terrible accident. The car's gone off the bridge down by the beach and Mary Jo is in it. Gargan recalled,
he didn't bark out any orders or anything. He made it clear he was driving the car and Mary Jo was with him. He didn't say how the accident happened. All he said was, there's been an accident. That's all I needed to know. The only thing that hit my mind was, go to the bridge as quickly as possible.
How about call the authorities?
Did the house have a phone?
Yes. Gargan expected to see, quote,
an automobile that had been driven into the water with the top sticking out.
He saw something entirely different.
Something much more horrifying. Something that would make you run back to the house to call the police.
Instead of doing that, they run into the water and try to save her in the dark, unqualified. Like, you wouldn't do that if you're not trying to cover something up. Like, why? Why do that? I don't understand that.
Yeah, unless also you just if there's want like rushing water, why are you risking your life and your friends' lives when she's clearly already dead because it's been freaking 45 minutes?
Yeah.
Unless you're trying to cover something up.
Or like be the hero that you want Ted to see you as, you know?
Yeah.
That's just not.
Unless you're trying to like clear your conscience. Behavior. Like maybe you are in shock and. Like, if it was one of my friends, I think probably I would still be, like, jumping into.
Maybe to go see the scene, yeah. But then after that.
Not to go see the scene, to, like, try to rescue the person in the car. Like, you're not rationally thinking, how long has it been? Can she breathe underwater that long, you know? Or, like, I would be maybe even in denial that, like,
but
maybe
you would
she's
send
still getting
one
air
person
somehow.
Back. Like, I'm going in, you go back and call.
Yeah.
Immediately.
For sure.
There's three of them.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and they're not 12 trying to figure this out. They're freaking in their 30s.
So I thought John Crimmins went with him. No, it was Markham, the guy who
is
wrote
a lawyer.
The statement.
What the crap?
So that he went with Joey and Ted to the scene of the crime that night and or the scene of the accident. And Ted's like freaking out, according to Joey. And then Markham said, well, it has happened. Because Ted just keeps saying,
I don't believe this could happen to me. I don't understand it. I don't know how it could happen.
The only people that saw the accident in the middle of the night were Joey and Markham.
And they could be lying.
Because I think they say that it had been like, it took him 25 minutes to walk from the scene of the accident to the cottage. And then it took them like 10 minutes to drive there. So it had been like 45 minutes since she drowned. Like Joey reported. But first of all, he could be lying. Second of all, that's just what he thinks. But Ted Kennedy could have been out there for a while.
Yeah. And also if he did try to save her, then that could have been an hour and a half of him like diving in, swimming,
right,
catching his breath, freaking out, what the crap am I doing, going back in, trying to debate, do I go back to the house, do I go to the police station, do I dive back in?
Because
then there's 2 hours buffer.
The way that he reported it doesn't say like, Ted told me he immediately did this, then he did this, then he did this. He's just saying it took about this long, we think, to walk. And this is what time he came and got us at.
So you're backtracking from that. Yeah. Nobody actually knows when the accident happened.
Right. No, like, he didn't even get a perfect play-by-play from Ted of like what happened.
Right.
He's just reporting. Ted was like freaking out. How could this happen? How could this happen? The thing is, Ted is lying about something. Every time he freaking opened his mouth about this, the fact that he was lying is so obvious to so many people. They even polled the public and like a vast majority of people were like,
there's no way he's telling the truth.
To some extent and capacity, he is hiding the truth.
Join us here next week to hear all about why the details about the accident are so sketchy. Kennedy doesn't know what happened.
Thank you all for listening to today's episode. If you enjoyed it, please give us a review on Apple, rate us on Spotify, and share Blood and Business with a friend or a sibling. If you'd like to support the show, the best way is to become a patron of Blood and Business. You will get bonus content every month, including a monthly bonus episode, interactive main episodes, and behind-the-scenes footage.
To keep up with us day-to-day, you can follow us at Blood and Business on Instagram and TikTok. You can find the link for Instagram, TikTok, and Patreon in the show notes below. Thank you so much for the support, and we will see you back here next week for your regularly scheduled programming on
Blood and Business.
If this is just pisses me off. If anyone ever truly deserved a Profiles in Courage Award, it was the late Leo Damore, the author of this book.
If anyone ever deserved.
I mean, that just sends me. Truly. How dare you? Anyway. Like the most noble thing anyone could ever do is point a finger at the Kennedys. Wow, you came out against the Kennedys like everyone else.
Yeah.